Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Triangulation, episode 103, recorded May 15th, 2013. Gavin Andreessen, chief scientist at the Bitcoin Foundation. Triangulation is brought to you by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, visit audiblepodcast.com/triangulation. It's time for Triangulation. I always want to say my favorite show on the TWiT network, but I do so many and they're all my children. But Triangulation I really like because it's a chance to sit down in a more leisurely way and talk to some of the most interesting, the biggest thinkers on the internet. And I learned so much. I hope you do too. We've got a very interesting conversation ahead. Today our guest is Gavin Andreessen. He is the, Chief Technical Officer, Vice President of Technology?
Chief Scientist,
even better, at the Bitcoin Foundation, which was only recently created, bitcoinfoundation.org. Gavin, it's so great to meet you.
Great to meet you.
And thank you for bringing cupcakes.
Oh, you're welcome.
Which you paid for in Bitcoin.
I did. I stopped by Cups and Cakes Bakery in San Francisco. And
now, how does that transaction occur?
Very well.
You don't take it out of your wallet and put it down on the counter.
No, they...
it's a virtual currency.
Their point-of-sale system is set up so that they will display a QR code that shows you the Bitcoin address to pay to and how much to pay. And then I just scan that with my phone.
Which has a wallet on
which
it,
has
a
Bitcoin wallet on it. And then I make sure that it's the right amount and poke send, and then it happens and it's done.
And how many Bitcoins did those five cupcakes cost? It sounds like a tongue twister.
0.37, if I recall correctly. Okay. I think that's right.
Yeah.
0.3.
And are they using
a dozen cupcakes?
Are they using Mt. Gox or something as the exchange? How do they know what to charge you? Is it change every day?
Yeah, they.
Because the Bitcoin value is pretty volatile.
They do. I believe they use BitPay. I'm not 100% sure about that. But there are a couple different services that will make it easy for merchants to accept Bitcoins.
So the reason I mentioned that right up front, rather than a long description of what Bitcoin is and could be and politically what it means, is because I wanted to show you that it is a currency that you can actually buy something real in. It's money.
It is.
It's just not governmental money.
Right.
So how... now I have a lot of questions. Where did Bitcoin come from? What is Bitcoin?
Bitcoin's a couple things. It's an open source software project.
Okay. In fact, the Bitcoin Foundation is modeled after the Linux Foundation.
The Bitcoin Foundation is modeled after the Linux Foundation. So a bunch of companies that are interested in Bitcoin succeeding because they're basing their businesses around Bitcoin.
Who's basing their business around Bitcoin?
There's a big Bitcoin exchange.
Mt.
Gox, yeah. Okay. Mt. Gox is a platinum member of the Bitcoin Foundation, one of founding member. CoinLab, another company that is involved
in Bitcoin
transactions.
I'm guessing Silk Road is not donating money to you.
Silk Road is not. They don't. Okay. The Bitcoin Foundation does require that you not be anonymous.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's one of the controversial things about the foundation.
So when did Bitcoin start?
January of 2009.
Satoshi Nakamoto. Who? No. By the way, that's probably a pseudonym. Yes?
Almost certainly.
Maybe for a person, maybe for a group of people.
Could be. I think it's a person.
One guy.
I think so, yeah.
Probably a guy with a very strong foundation in crypto.
Yes. A strong foundation in
a number of
things. Computer science, because he had to do crypto. He had to do Bitcoin's a peer-to-peer payment network.
Very sophisticated peer-to-peer network.
Yep. I don't know if I go that far.
Not so sophisticated? Simple.
It's a pretty simple peer-to-peer network, but very effective.
Certainly effective.
Peer-to-peer network.
But he also had to very much understand monetary policy, what makes money tick, things like inflation, deflation. These are, in fact, hard things for people to understand. And I bet there's not necessarily a conjunction of computer scientists and economists.
It's true. And, I mean, that's one of the reasons I got involved in Bitcoin is because I have been interested in economics and finance and how money works. And combine that with, you know, I'm a big computer geek.
Right.
Interested in peer-to-peer technologies.
Okay.
And kind of decentralized ways of doing things. And then also crypto, you know, I'm just fascinated by cryptography.
It is fascinating, yeah.
And Bitcoin combines all of those things into this wonderful system that also has the potential to change the world, which really appeals to me.
I want to start with the history and the crypto behind it and talk about the pure science of it first. But I would very much like to get into the politics of it. So we'll save that for the second half of the conversation. But I want people to understand kind of what are the underpinnings. So do we know why Satoshi Nakamoto created it? He created it anonymously, reasonably so, but presuming that perhaps governments might not be thrilled about this. And it seems to have disappeared. You've conversed with him, but only via email. And the last contact you had with him was?
I think May of 2011.
A long time ago. A couple years ago.
Why did he create it? I think partly because he could. I mean,
was it just an exercise for him, you think?
No, well, I mean, I think it fit his politics. We have writings of Satoshi where he does talk about wanting to take power away from the banks and kind of give power back to people. And it's obvious he doesn't like, you know, the monetary system that we have and thought this would be a better way of doing money. And then he came up with this brilliant insight into how you could actually make it work. Because cryptocurrency has the idea of cryptocurrency has been around since the 90s. You know, there was DigiCash and various other forms of e-currency.
And we're going to have to really step back. Why crypto? Why does crypto go hand in hand with the currency?
Crypto lets you kind of securely transfer value from one person to another. And so those transactions are protected by cryptography, by unbreakable algorithms so that somebody else can't pretend to be you and create transactions that are supposed to be from you that aren't.
You need the crypto to prevent fraud.
Exactly, yeah.
And to make sure that if it's a coin, if whatever says it's a coin, and I don't know, we'll have to figure this out, but whatever says it's a coin, it really is a coin.
Right.
As opposed to something that I just manufactured and pulled out of my sleeve.
Yeah. I mean, for a money to be valuable, it has to be rare.
Right.
It can't. If you can create an infinite amount of something, then it has no value. So Bitcoin, Satoshi figured out a way of creating value in this decentralized way where there's no single person, company, government in charge.
And he did some really interesting things. Maybe this has been done before in cryptocurrency. But he wanted to create a money supply, but he wanted to do it in a rational way. I mean, you could just wave a wand and say, I hereby say there's 100
million. I have 100 million bitcoins, and I'll just give them out to all my friends.
You could do that.
And that's essentially what previous digital currencies did. And then you had to trust the person who created that, those bitcoin, that currency to be fair about how they distributed them and not to create too many and to be honest and not to go away either, you know, not to go out of business.
So how did he solve this problem?
Math.
That's good because math has a rigorous logic.
It does. So he set up a system where there will only ever be 21 million bitcoins.
Total.
And that's a little misleading because they're divisible down to 8 decimal places.
Almost infinitely. I mean, you can really subdivide them.
Yeah. There's 2.1 quadrillion.
Possible bitcoins.
Possible. The smallest unit, which people call a Satoshi in honor of.
Oh, that's nice.
Satoshi, which is nice.
The smallest 0.00001 bitcoins is a Satoshi.
Yes. And that's...
I like it.
Yeah, the Bitcoin community came up with
that.
You know, it wasn't Satoshi deciding that would be called a Satoshi.
It should be. That's perfect.
It is.
And the way that we create... Because all of the 21 million bitcoins have not been created.
No, we're at about 11 million right now.
They won't be done till
2140, the very last little tiny fraction of a bitcoin will be created.
But it's not a straight line.
No, it's this exponential function, which... Satoshi never explicitly stated, as far as I know, he never explicitly stated why he chose the particular values he did. I believe the reasoning behind it was so that it acted like a natural resource, like digging gold out of the ground.
But a finite natural resource.
A finite natural resource, yeah.
But it didn't appear all at once, and it didn't appear slowly. It didn't even appear linearly.
Nope. So there was a lot.
A
lot at first, then it gets smaller and smaller over time.
And the way a Bitcoin is created is by solving a tough mathematical problem. By the way, we have a whole Security Now devoted to this. If you really want to get geeky, Security Now 287. Steve Gibson, kind of, and you listened to that. Would you say that he got it fairly accurate?
Yeah, he did a great job. Okay, I mean, good. A couple minor, tiny little details.
Yeah,
but
something
no, fantastic.
Only the chief scientist at the Bitcoin Foundation would
yes.
probably even notice.
Okay. Exactly.
So you, but now I'll get it all wrong. So you correct me. You solve a tough mathematical problem.
Yes, and
it's a factoring problem.
It's actually a hashing problem.
Okay.
So you, and it's interesting because
and you do this. Computationally, you don't do it with pencil and paper.
No. Yeah, you use a computer. And you used to be able to create Bitcoins on your laptop.
Yeah,
you know,
Steve
just ordinary.
Put a Bitcoin mining program on, you know, a PC. I think it was, an i7, but it was just a regular old PC. He got 50 Bitcoins right away. He's sitting on 50 Bitcoins. It's a little harder now. But that's intentional, right?
That is intentional. The more people who try to create them, the harder it gets because, again, there's a limited supply. So you have to make them rare.
Satoshi rightly presumed that computing power would increase over time, that yep. perhaps more and more people would want to make Bitcoins. So it's almost it's a factor of the total computational power available
exactly.
now, right? By the number of miners and the amount of power each of them has.
Exactly. And the whole network adjusts itself.
That's pretty sweet.
It is. It was really brilliant.
It's very elegant.
I mean, and the other brilliant thing he did is, I mean, people say, well, why would you waste all this electricity creating Bitcoins? It seems
right.
like a waste of time. But miners, we call people who create Bitcoin miners because it's like mining for gold. Miners also perform the function of validating all the transactions. So they are actually doing useful work. They're making sure that, you know, every Bitcoin transaction, you know, is cryptographically correct
there's no central authority validating this.
No, it's the software running on everybody's machines that is doing all of the validation.
Could you write a rogue Bitcoin miner that would somehow break these rules?
You can, but I mean, as soon as the Bitcoin, the new Bitcoins and the Bitcoin transactions are all self-validating, so once you announce them to the network, everybody checks your work. And so
this is all done automatically.
And it's all done automatically. So, you know, if I could hack my Bitcoin miner so I create 1,000 Bitcoins instead of right now Bitcoin miners are creating 25 Bitcoins at a time.
Mm-hmm. Each problem solved is 25 Bitcoins.
It's 25 Bitcoins, yeah.
And that number
goes down. It was 50.
It was 50.
Yeah, when Steve got those 50 Bitcoins, it was 50.
Right.
Every 4 years, it's actually cut in half. And that's how we get to that. The last tiny little bit of Bitcoin will be created in the year 2140.
Right.
But, you know, if I announced if I said, I created 1,000 Bitcoins, everybody would check that and say, no, you didn't. Sorry, we just don't accept those as valid Bitcoins.
So people run this program on their computers. There are people buying Bitcoin mining. In fact, you know, and I'm going to ask you about Butterfly Labs. There's a company called Butterfly Labs. What the people have figured out is the best way to do this is with a GPU, not a CPU. The nature of the problem's
Well, we went from CPUs,
yep.
right, just ordinary computers, to GPUs.
Now ASICs.
We went through an FPGA period of custom, semi-custom hardware, and now we're at
fully
ASICs,
custom.
Fully custom.
What
is special
the
design.
Problem's the same? It's just that people have said, okay, I can make something that does an even better job at doing these hashes.
More yes, and it's all about power efficiency. Actually,
You started saying this. Let's talk about this. So you somehow factor in the cost of the power too.
Well, it does. If the value of Bitcoins you get, if you pay more in electricity than the values of Bitcoin
that's
you
stupid.
Get, then it's stupid.
Right.
Exactly. So unless you're living in a dorm,
somebody else is paying the power,
and we don't know. Anyway, we don't know how much Bitcoin mining.
Some
is
of these mining
in dorms.
Apparatuses, it looks like they're using thousands of watts. It's huge. These things.
It can be. Yeah.
But so is that factored into the value as well, or the problem-solving difficulty?
Well, the economics just work themselves out.
It just happens to work.
Yeah. So, you know, if your cost of...
You're not going to do it if it costs you more to do it.
Exactly.
And it's worth.
And we see that. We see people dropping out if the Bitcoin price drops.
Are we wasting power to do this? I mean, is this like... What is the total power cost going to be of 21 million Bitcoins? Do we know?
We don't know.
Because it's getting cheaper, I presume. Do ASICs use less power?
ASICs do use less power. They're more efficient.
Right.
So I mean, the incentives are set up so that it should get more efficient over time.
Right.
And I expect if Bitcoin continues to be successful that we'll have, you know, hot water heaters that also mine Bitcoins. Because, you know, if you're going to generate some heat,
you might as well, right? But
not
you don't, and this is a very important distinction, you don't have to mine Bitcoins to use Bitcoins. This is a small group of people who want to something for nothing, effectively, or maybe not quite nothing, but they want to kind of, it's fun for them.
Yeah, I don't know if you'd call it a small group, but I mean, as a percentage of
the... Well, how many Bitcoin miners are there, do you think? Do you know?
That's a darn good question. I would guess...
Thousands?
Oh, yeah, tens of thousands.
Tens of thousands?
Yeah, easily. I mean, at any given time, there's somewhere between 10 and 20,000 people directly connected to the Bitcoin network. And then most miners actually don't directly connect to the Bitcoin network. They work together in what's called a mining pool.
Kind of like a lottery pool at work where you all go in and buy a ticket.
Exactly.
But
you're right. I mean, for me, mining is actually the least interesting part of the whole
Bitcoin
system.
I'm running a Bitcoin wallet on my Mac. At all times, it's always running.
Yeah.
Because people donate Bitcoins. If you go to twit.tv, by popular demand, I don't even know why we're doing it. But people wanted to give us Bitcoins. I said, fine. So I set up the wallet. What you get when you get a wallet is the ability to generate an unlimited number of unique codes that are yours. They're completely anonymous, right? That's an interesting question.
It's anonymity in Bitcoin is really complicated. Because, I mean, first of all, you know, your internet connection probably isn't anonymous.
Absolutely not, yeah.
So, you know, your ISP knows who you are.
But do they know? So if there's our code, and there, if you see, there's two ways to do it. The QR code will generate that very long. How many bits is that number?
160 bits.
160-bit number.
Yep.
And that number, I could generate an infinite number of them. That one, if you use that, will tell me that you got this from the TwitLive page, because I've added that little bit in there when I generated the number. But it tells me nothing about you, because if you give me a Bitcoin, I don't know who gave me the money at all.
Right. In fact, I did give you a fraction of a
Bitcoin.
Thank
you.
You're welcome.
So I didn't know that, unless you tell me, obviously.
But everybody knows how many Bitcoins that address has received, so everybody has some information
knowledge.
About. And then when you go to spend those Bitcoins, you know, if somebody was...
Are those Bitcoins tied to that address?
Yes.
They are.
Yeah. So, I mean, and so when you go to spend those Bitcoins, if you wanted to be anonymous when you were spending them and not have the person you're giving the Bitcoins to know that it was you, well, they could figure out that it was
right.
you because you've made
that's a public address.
Public, exactly.
Can I launder them? Can I donate them to another private address personally? I could easily do that.
You could, yes.
It'd be easy to launder these.
It is fairly easy, although, you know, there are computer scientists who do what's called network analysis, and the Bitcoin transactions form this graph
right.
where you can see, you know,
there's transactions. Some pretty amazing. The point being, don't assume you have 100% anonymity.
No.
However,
they're
barring
pretty darn...
somebody really wanting to figure out who did this, it's pretty anonymous.
Yeah, I say they're less anonymous than cash, but more anonymous than any other form of online payment.
Yeah. And this, by the way, is why cash persists, because it is the last form of anonymous transactions.
It is.
Which is both a pro and a con.
Yeah, and I mean, the foreword, what is Bitcoin? Bitcoin is cash for the internet.
Right.
That's really what it's designed to be and what it is and what it's...
Making anything on the internet anonymous is a very tough challenge. So the fact that you've come so close is pretty good.
It is. And they're actually, you know, there are research groups who are figuring out how to go the last...
Oh, interesting.
You know, little bit to make it really and truly bulletproof, cryptographically secure,
right.
anonymous. There's a system called ZeroCoin that isn't practical yet, but I'm told that...
And that's not Bitcoin. It's another kind of internet currency.
It's... No, actually...
It's a form of Bitcoin.
It's a form of Bitcoin, yes.
Anonymous form of Bitcoin.
So okay. they've described how you would layer it on top of the Bitcoin network.
So... You don't have to be a miner to participate. I'm not. I participate.
Yeah, I'm not either, actually.
Yeah, really?
No. Nope.
You know, people mine because it's something for nothing, and it's fun. And, you know, there's a I mentioned Butterfly Labs. They've become under a lot of scrutiny because they announced that we're going to make ASICs.
Yeah.
And we're going to offer, for instance, a Bitcoin miner that's 50 giga hashes per second. That's pretty fast, right?
Yes.
For $2,500. Now, the irony is the way this is all set up, it's kind of tuned so that it will turn out that the number of Bitcoins that will generate will be worth $2,500 roughly, right? You may take advantage of the fact that you're the first to own it. It's a
That is the thing about, yes, if you have a technological advantage.
It's brief.
it tends to get wiped out just because of competition.
Right.
So, you know.
So everybody who buys these Butterfly Labs things, they're going to make it, they're going to reduce the.
They're going to make it harder to find Bitcoins. Right. They drive up what's called the difficulty. And it's a very interesting dynamic.
So you want to buy one early, not late. It's kind of like a pyramid scheme in that regard.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Get in early. I shouldn't use that phrase because that's a con game, and this is not a con game.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing about a pyramid scheme is as soon as people stop joining, it just all falls apart.
Right. This continues no matter what.
But yeah, I mean, Bitcoin, even if, you know, even if Bitcoin stopped right now and just all the people who have Bitcoin and are transacting in Bitcoin continued, you know, it doesn't require new people.
No more has to be made.
Exactly. No more. And we don't need new people coming in.
Right.
You know, just the.
It's a system. It's already there.
Exactly. It's a transaction system.
Do you know about these Butterfly Labs guys? You must.
I do. I actually have one of their
jalapeno
systems on pre-order. I'm hoping by the time I get back home, maybe I'll have a box.
Have they delivered any of these yet?
They have delivered a couple.
Steve presumed that it's very difficult to make an ASIC.
It is. And, you know, I began my career at Silicon Graphics.
Ah, so you know.
Silicon Valley.
This,
and I know all about hardware being late.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think they're just typical startup.
Yeah, that's what he says. He says, I have no reason to believe they're not completely honest, and they're just tough to make these things, and they're running into difficulties. But
it is. Right. I'm glad I'm a software guy because
hardware is hard.
Hardware is hard. It really is.
Software is hard too. I can't take to tell you this. We're talking to Gavin Andreessen about Bitcoin. He is the chief scientist at Bitcoin Labs, BitcoinFoundation.org, which is the kind of set up like Linux Foundation, kind of the open source. What is the role of BitcoinFoundation.org? What is...
It's preserve, promote, and defend Bitcoin. So, is that right?
It doesn't need you to continue.
No.
And there's no more... Is there more development going on? No. I mean, the algorithm's there. There are different wallets being made.
There is development going on. I mean, we're dealing with, you know, optimizing the software that everybody's running as the transaction volume ramps up. So, you know, typical, you know...
Got it.
Typical software stuff. Exactly.
Yeah.
I've actually been doing a lot of work to help make Bitcoin wallets more secure because that's a real issue.
Well, and we've heard of people having their wallets stolen.
Yep.
And if you do, it's kind of hard to find any recourse because it's pretty anonymous.
There's nobody to call. You know, I get emails saying...
Call the cops.
I get emails saying, you know, somebody stole my wallet and can you get it back? And I have to say... Sorry.
So this is a potential problem, but there are ways to make these more secure.
There are, and we're working on things like, well, people are coming out with hardware wallets, so a little hardware device that stores your Bitcoins, which is great because it's much harder to hack.
It's a physical thing.
A physical thing than a PC or a phone. I've actually been working a lot on multi-device technology, so you could have Bitcoins that are stored both on your phone and your computer.
Same wallet, in effect.
Exactly. Same wallet, just split between
Without
two different devices.
Without duplicating the coins.
So you need to authorize a transaction on both your computer and your phone.
Makes sense. Yeah.
And then if somebody wanted to hack that wallet, they'd
have to
get
the computer, too.
Both the computer
like
and the phone.
It's like two-factor.
Exactly. Yeah. Two-factor Bitcoins.
I like it. Are you doing work, somebody in the chat room wants to know, to increase the number of people who accept Bitcoin as a currency? Is that part of your mission?
I mean, the Bitcoin Foundation certainly
Not
wants
your personal
that
mission,
to happen.
Yeah,
I mean, my personal
foundation.
Mission is, you know, keep the core network
right.
processing transactions. And yeah, I mean, part of that, we have a big Bitcoin conference happening down in San Jose.
Oh, when's that?
This weekend.
Well, how nice.
Which is why I'm in town and why I could come to visit
so
you.
So you're not located in the Bay Area?
No, Massachusetts, normally.
Oh, all right. The foundation probably is virtual, right?
Foundation is virtual. Yeah. In fact, finding meeting times is tough because we have people in Japan and Seattle and.
So tell me about the conference. This is going to be in San Jose this week.
This weekend, yeah. Weekend. It starts Friday night with a kickoff, and then it runs through the weekend.
And who attends this? Enthusiasts?
We're going to have three main tracks in the conference. There's a technical track, which I'll be hanging out in a lot. Talking about people doing exciting technical things related to Bitcoin, a kind of business startup track, so there'll be a lot of VCs there. There's been a ton of interest in, you know, the money community. They're pretty excited about potential
really?
For Bitcoin.
Yeah, they're interested.
Oh, absolutely, yes. I mean,
not been threatened by it.
No.
Some are
well, I mean, the venture capitalists...
they want to invest.
...are always interested in disruptive technologies.
That's right.
You know, they use that disruptive... And they see Bitcoin as potentially incredibly disruptive in a lot of businesses.
And you're all going to Star Trek on Friday night.
Yes. They're
very
actually
important.
Yes. there's a whole...
Bitcoin 2013, the future of payments. It's in San Jose, and it's at Bitcoin2013.com. And this is really interesting. The Winklevoss twins are keynoting.
Yep, they are.
Wow. Are there Bitcoin interest in Bitcoin? I think I read that.
Yeah, they have been investing in Bitcoin and say they own...
They're buying Bitcoin?
Many. They're buying Bitcoin, and they're also investing in Bitcoin companies.
Well, I'll tell you the truth. After watching the value of Bitcoin go sky high on Mt. Gox, it's funny. I started the Bitcoin donation the day it peaked. The day they had the big crash.
Yeah.
And for a while, I was thinking... This is pretty, you know, it's no harm doing this. I got 3 or 4 Bitcoins in there. That could be worth a lot of money in 5 or 10 years. One of the issues with Bitcoin that people notice is the volatility. I mean, it really is, if you go to Mt. Gox, is Mt. Gox a good place to look at the value of Bitcoin?
Mt. Gox is a good, okay. I mean, they're the leading exchange.
Right.
Doing like
they're not the only exchange.
No. There are several, maybe as many as a dozen or two exchanges.
And when you say exchange, that means they buy Bitcoin for cash?
They're a marketplace where people
buyers
can trade Bitcoins for dollars. So just like, you know, there are currency exchanges that exchange euros for dollars,
right.
Yen for
it's
euros.
Like an international currency exchange, except it's...
Exactly. This is Bitcoin for... And Mt. Gox supports Bitcoin to several different currencies.
So the asking price that... Or the, you know, the selling price that they quote is what they'll... Their buyers, because they're not buying, but
right.
Their buyers are currently paying... Per Bitcoin, currently it's at $115 a Bitcoin, but it was higher still.
Yeah, I think it peaked at like 260.
But I noticed it's kind of rebounded.
Too high, too fast.
It is.
And yeah, I mean the volatility is definitely an issue
because it scares people because they don't know what they've got.
It does. I mean,
the cupcake people, that's got to scare them.
Well, I mean, merchants, it's actually not that huge a problem for because there are companies that will take away the volatility risk for you. So you can say, you know, I want to accept Bitcoins for payment.
Right.
I'm still going to price all of my whatever, my cupcakes in dollars.
Right.
The, you know, exchange rate is determined minute by minute.
Right.
You know, so when I paid, the exchange rate was locked in for 15 minutes. So the payment would happen. And then actually... these companies will either give you the Bitcoins or will deposit dollars into your bank
right.
account. So they take
it's
care
like
of...
It's like insurance.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so for merchants, I mean, the volatility actually isn't that big an issue because, you know, like price tags that you write down on your products can still be in dollars. And
right.
then, you know, all of the... It can just be calculated when the purchase happens.
They're using BitPay, which is one of the companies that does this, right? You said they use BitPay? No?
I'm not sure if they're using BitPay or Coinbase, but they're using one of these. I mean, there are several companies that are...
It sounds like there's going to be a large secondary market of people providing financial services around Bitcoin.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. I mean, well, the exchanges are independent. The, you know, the merchant processing people, like the BitPays and the Coinbases. And we'll see all sorts of other... Interesting.
So interesting. See, I want to hold my Bitcoins. And this is another problem, because when people hoard money, does that not have a deflationary impact on the value of the
money? I talked to the BitPay folks about that. And they said every time the price spikes, they see more transactions, not fewer. And I think that makes sense, because, you know, if you're holding some Bitcoins that you spent $10 on and now they're worth $50...
Yeah, I'm going to sell them.
I might as well buy something, right?
Right?
You know, it's kind of free money to me. So the whole, you know, Bitcoin will fail because it will be hoarded. Yeah.
You're not worried about that.
I'm not worried about that.
The other issue people sometimes mention is people lose their wallets. It's not impossible. In fact, I'm very careful to make sure my wallet's on a Dropbox so it's distributed and backed up because that's my wallet.
Yep.
And just like losing a wallet full of cash, it's gone.
I get email from people, too, saying either they lost their wallet or they lost their password.
So I'm very careful. And there's no recovery,
and there's
right?
no recovery. No, I mean, when Bitcoins belong to you, they belong to you, and you're responsible for keeping them safe.
There is a in a governmental currency, people lose pennies, but we just make more. You can't do that with Bitcoin.
You don't. I mean, every time you lose a bit penny, you actually make everybody else a little bit richer.
Right, because the pool is
shrunk. There are fewer Bitcoins to go around, and so they're worth
a little
bit
more. Won't this be a problem over time? I guess, how many quadrillion?
2.1 quadrillion.
I guess people would have to lose a lot of Bitcoin.
You would have to lose a lot of Bitcoins. And I mean, if that ever became a problem, we'd probably...
You could make more.
Yeah, well, expand out the decimal places. So instead of going down to, you know, 1/100 millionth of a Bitcoin, go down to 1/1 trillionth of a Bitcoin.
Of course you could.
We could.
That's like printing more. And one of the reasons people like Bitcoin is because you don't have that central bank... that can mess around.
Right.
But you could. Are you saying there is?
I could not. Well, me personally.
No,
you know,
you're not going to, but somebody could.
You know, if anybody could, I could, right?
Oh,
I'm
could.
I'm the lead developer for the software project.
Oh, boy.
But, you know, if I were to say, hey, guys, I think 21
million.
Ben
Bernanke right
the wrong
here.
Number. You know, my favorite number is 11, so we're going to make it 111 million Bitcoins.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
I would get fired.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Right? Nobody's going to
right.
Nobody's going to go for that because you'd be devaluing your own Bitcoins.
Right.
And why would you do that?
Right.
So.
It doesn't have to be perfect, or does it?
What doesn't have to be perfect?
Well, the system could have a flaw. You could maybe have a deflationary problem. It doesn't have to be perfect because it's a first attempt at this. Or is this going to be it? There's going to be others, right?
Oh, there are others.
It's not the only cryptocurrency now. It certainly won't be the only cryptocurrency in the future.
It's open source. So something interesting that has happened since the price bubbled way up, the number of Alternacoins, I call them, that are like Bitcoin, only a little bit different, have just skyrocketed. There are dozens of them.
Because of the notoriety of Bitcoin.
Because of the notoriety, because I think we got a lot more people interested in it, because you got a lot of, you know...
You raised everybody's awareness. I mean, we were talking before the show, the New Yorker has a cartoon with Bitcoin as a punchline.
Yep.
That tells you that the world now knows about Bitcoin. Big time.
It's true.
Yeah.
At least the...
New Yorker people do.
The U.S. and Europe world. You know, I don't know if Bitcoin has really gotten that big in other parts of the world.
Well, but interesting, at least according to this New Yorker article, there are Bitcoin ATMs now. There's going to be one in Cyprus. There are a couple in the U.S., right?
That's the plan, yeah.
I could put in my money and get Bitcoin or vice versa.
Yep. I'll be very interested to talk to the Bitcoin ATM folks about regulation because that's...
Yeah.
When we were talking about the conference tracks, that was actually the third conference track we didn't get to. There's a whole section of the conference talking about how is Bitcoin going to fit into our existing regulations around money and currency and banking and all of that stuff.
People get really squirrely because it's really funny that when people first start talking about Bitcoin with people, they go, but it's made up. It's all made up. And then you say, but you know what?
U.S. dollars so are a virtual fiat. Currency too, yeah.
That's what the fiat and fiat currency means. It's all made up.
Well, I think a large percentage, there was some poll where they asked people, you know, are dollars still backed by gold? And a large percentage of people thought that, you know, the dollars we have in our pockets, that there is gold in a vault somewhere, and that went away.
Not silver, not gold,
Nixon.
Not nothing.
Nope.
But even that was kind of imaginary, because gold really, I mean, it has some value, but not whatever it is now, it's value. There's not, the industrial value of gold is much lower.
Right.
So that's made up, too.
It is. I mean,
it's
value...
It's perceived value.
Well, and value is an interesting thing, because, you know... A thing's value is either because it's useful or because it's rare.
Because I say so.
Right? I mean, you know, a hammer has value because you can use it to pound your nails.
Right.
A Picasso painting has value because it's rare.
Right.
Right?
But so is this little painting I just made here. Pure rareness is not the only thing in a Picasso painting. There's something about it. We all agree. There's a consensual hallucination that's... We love that.
Right. And so Bitcoin really, you know, people always ask... What is Bitcoin backed by? Where does it get its value? It's valuable because it's useful and it's rare.
Yeah.
So, and that's really it. It's just hard for people to imagine that this kind of made-up thing that has no other use can really have value.
Do you get better at explaining this as you do it? I mean,
I'm
sure
so.
Your parents and other people go, what are you talking about, Gavin? What are you doing? What is this all about here?
I think it won't be real for most people until they actually try it.
Well, that's why I started with you buying cupcakes. And actually, I'm glad you bought those. And I'm sure that's probably why you did.
But they
were mighty good, too. But it is real because you can buy cupcakes with it.
Yes, and I think, you know, as we get things like hardware wallets, if I could give somebody a hardware wallet with a Bitcoin on it and say, you know, here's some Bitcoins you can use and can be confident that they're probably not going to lose it if it has, you know, if they know it has some value, they're not going to get hacked because, you know, it's not just some software running on a PC that has a bunch of malware on it. You know, I think that kind of thing will really help. Really, real mass adoption.
Is it, do you think, the intent to replace U.S. currency, governmental currencies?
That's the goal. I mean, the goal is to, or at least compete with, you know, dollars, euros, yens, zlotny.
But yeah, I think Satoshi thought, I have no idea who Satoshi is or what he thought, but it seems as if he thought maybe there was a better way. That we could make something, the intent was to make something better. Yes?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, and the intent is really to kind of give us back control of our money, right? Because if you think of the history of money, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it used to be, you know, seashells or salt or gold or silver, or, you know, those were the kinds of things that were used as money, and there was nothing stopping anybody from going to try to find those rare seashells or dig up the gold or, you know, create the salt. Then in the modern world, we've gone to, you know, governments produce the money and governments control the money supply.
And by the way, many would say that's an important ability that Bitcoin lacks, which is the ability to turn up the money supply and turn it down.
A lot of economists really don't like Bitcoin.
People like Paul Krugman say, if you don't have the ability to make more money, you have no way to dig yourself out of a recession, as we've done.
That's what they claim. I mean, there's another school of economists, which are not in vogue, that think that something like a gold standard would be a better way of doing it.
Or a
fixed predictable money supply.
Right.
And, you know, I'm a computer programmer.
Right.
And having a nice simple system really appeals to me.
Yeah.
And so part of the big appeal of the Bitcoin money system is the supply side is simple.
Right.
You know, you can see exactly what the supply of Bitcoin is going to be.
That problem was solved. Satoshi solved that problem.
He did. And now the question is, you know, could that work as like a global monetary system? I don't know. I don't know if we'll ever get a chance to run that experiment.
What has been the response of governments to this?
It's been a little bit wait and see. I mean, Bitcoin has been too small, really, for them to worry too much about. Although we are starting to see regulation of the exchanges. And actually just
today,
there is big news that the Department of Homeland Security seems to be quite upset with Mt. Gox because they opened a bank account and didn't fill out the right paperwork to say that they were a money transmitter, which is bad for Mt. Gox. I think it's great for Bitcoin because it means the U.S. government thinks that Bitcoin is money.
Right. Because it's DHS, you might wonder if they're concerned about it being used as a way to...
Terrorist financing, I'm sure, is their big concern that this could be a way of...
Because it's anonymous. But cash is anonymous also.
Cash is anonymous
and
also,
I don't see
the
DHS eliminating cash.
Although, you know, intercepting suitcases of dollars at the border is probably easier than trying to, you know, intercept Bitcoin transactions going across the internet. So I see their concerns. And I think the good thing is that, you know, so far they're not saying, you know, Bitcoin is illegal, this is bad. They're just saying, you know, you have to comply with the regulations.
Right. And in fact, the SEC established some regulations, which is appropriate.
Well, it's the,
not the
Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, FinCEN.
FinCEN, that's it.
Yeah. FinCEN issued guidelines on if you're doing this, then you are this, and if you're doing that, then you are that.
Which is good.
It's very good.
It's almost a recognition.
Yeah.
At least it's setting the rules. It's saying, here's how you play the game.
Yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, as long as the rules are clear.
Yeah.
I mean, we could argue about whether the rules make sense. Often with government, they don't. But, yeah, clear rules are good.
I kind of ask you, you've interacted with Satoshi, at least via email. Do you think he's Japanese? It's a Japanese name. Mt. Gox is in Japan.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. You know, all I know about him is he tends to use some British spellings in
interesting
in some of the words.
Okay, that could be a giveaway or a ruse.
You know, he spells color with a U.
Favorite.
It could be. I mean, he was very careful
He's
about
a smart guy.
Maintaining his anonymity.
If I wanted to be anonymous, I probably would spell favorite with a U too.
Yeah. Well, if I wanted to be anonymous, I might, you know, like run everything I wrote through a translate to Russian and then run it back to really throw people off.
Oh,
or
that
something.
Would work.
I don't know.
Yeah. But because Mt. Gox is in Japan, I mean, I imagine some think Mt. Gox is Satoshi.
I don't think so.
No. I guess it's a fruitless conversation. We just don't know.
Yeah, we don't know.
We may never know.
It'd be nice.
I'd love to know.
Yeah, I would love to know, too.
Just say, hey, nice job, man.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
Great
idea.
He
figured this all out. And he was pretty active. He wrote papers and he emailed you and others, and he was kind of...
He was active on the Bitcoin forums.
Yeah.
Yep.
Do we have any idea why he disappeared? Did he say goodbye?
He said he was going to be busy with other projects. But he never specified what those other projects would be.
Yeah.
And then he kind of stepped back, pulled a fast one on me, and kind of pushed me forward as the face of the project.
So he actually said... This guy, Gavin.
He never explicitly said that, although what he did was he asked me if it'd be okay if he put my email address on the Bitcoin.org homepage.
That's pretty cool.
And I said okay, and then he took his email address away. So suddenly I was getting all of the queries.
So you met him in the forums.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I met him at the forums. I sent him a message saying I thought Bitcoin was really cool and, you know, how can I help? And then I did this famous website called the Bitcoin Faucet, where I started giving away Bitcoins. Because it seemed to me...
That was you.
That was me, yes.
That's so cool. You were giving people Bitcoins.
I was giving people 5 Bitcoins.
Yeah, you crazy man. Gone, right?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I gave away 10,000 Bitcoins.
Did you really? Do you have any regrets?
Well,
that's a lot of money now.
Well, 10,000 Bitcoins times $100 is $1 million,
yeah.
Right? If I had kept them. But... I mean, that was the thing, right? If I hadn't have given them away so
you
people could try
might not
out,
be worth anything.
Maybe Bitcoins would still be worth half a penny a piece.
You primed the pump with the Bitcoin faucet.
That was the idea.
You were giving away a Bitcoin every 24 hours or something like that? What was the...
It was per IP address.
Gosh.
And then, actually, it turns out it's a lot harder to prevent people from cheating than you might think.
You're not Satoshi.
I am not Satoshi. No. And anybody
would be the first thing I would assume.
Anybody who looks at kind of the style of coding that Satoshi wrote and my style of coding, you know, and I have a history going back. I think you could clearly tell these are different people writing this code.
It's written in Qt, his original code.
No, his original code is all C++.
C++.
Written against the WX widgets.
That's WX widgets.
But we switched to Qt.
Now it's Qt.
A year or two ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh. I guess that wouldn't be so hard. I mean, they've done that with Shakespeare, where you do a textual analysis.
I don't know if anybody's been, like, people coding analysis, but, I mean, people do have particular coding styles. You could totally
do that. How many lines of code do we have from Satoshi? Thousands?
Yeah, thousands.
I think somebody ought to get on that. Seriously.
Figure out who Satoshi is based on what code he wrote and maybe what code he wrote in the past.
Of course, if he's smart, that's his only open source project ever.
Right.
Then we'll never know.
Unless he comes out with a new open source project, maybe.
Do you think somebody is capable of writing in 2 different code styles? No.
I think it'd be tough.
Be hard, because it's more intimate than prose. It's really, it's the output of your mind almost more directly than text is. So what do you think this is? By the way, anybody who has any questions, I'll tell you what, let's take a break. Give Gavin a breather. And if you have any questions, we can get the chat room involved. I'm going to mention audible.com real quickly. Anybody who does a lot of traveling, as you do, you probably should know about Audible.com. It's the awesomest audio bookstore, over 100,000 titles, and everything from fiction to nonfiction, lots of science fiction. That's, I know, you know, we're all into science fiction. Brand new books, too. This is one of the things I'm starting to really appreciate about Audible. Nowadays, when a publisher comes out with a hardcover book, they put out an Audible version of the book at the same time. Dan Brown's newest just came out. And, of course, immediately available on Audible. In fact, that's how I listened to The Da Vinci Code. Really is fun. All four of Dan Brown's novels in that series are now available on Audible.com. If you liked The Kite Runners, Khalid Hosseini has a new book, and The Mountains Echoed. That's coming out May 21st. That's a week from now. But you can sign up at audiblepodcast.com/triangulation and get that book free, or any one of their, almost any one of their 100,000-plus books at audible.com. They've got great apps for iOS, Android, Windows Phone, Windows 8. It really is easy. It's really awesome. I want you to try it. Audible Pocket, free book. Just go to audiblepodcast.com/triangulation. I have been a member for more than 13 years now. And I'll tell you, it saved me on my regular commutes. audiblepodcast.com/triangulation. Get started listening today. We're talking to Gavin. Is it Andreessen or Andreessen?
Andreessen.
Andreessen, like Mark Andreessen, but not spelled the same way.
That's right.
No relation.
No relation.
Another great programmer, coder. Somebody asked in the chat room if I could ask you about the Genesis coin.
Genesis block?
Yeah, block. What is that?
That's the very first... To start up Bitcoin, you start with, you know, what's called a block. It's just a...
It's the first problem to solve.
The first problem to solve, exactly.
But it generates the subsequent problems from that?
Every subsequent problem is chained to that Genesis block.
So that's the...
So transactions are ordered based on this, what's called the blockchain, and that defines what the valid transactions are. So the very first block is called the Genesis block, and Satoshi wrote some code to just...
He just made it up.
Made it up and then put the parameters directly into the source code, so you have kind of a firm starting point.
It could have been anything, though. I mean, it's not critical that that be purely random or anything like that.
No,
it?
I mean, he did put a newspaper headline
in it
in the Genesis block, so that everybody would know that it was created on that date, and he didn't create it before then
because he couldn't have known the headline.
Because he couldn't have known the headline.
He could have created after, but not before.
So it's a headline about monetary policy, and which tells you a little bit about...
Don't you want to just kind of take some time and figure out who the hell this guy is?
I'm busy, man. I don't have time to...
God, somebody ought to do some detective work. We need Sherlock Holmes. He left clues, folks. He wants to be caught, I'm telling you. Maybe not.
I don't know about that.
Who catches him.
Yeah,
he was always pretty coy about it?
He was always pretty coy. Yeah, never.
Where are you, Satoshi?
My first message to him, I asked him, you know, is this your real name? What do you do? What have you done in the past? He just ignored all that.
Yeah, yeah.
Strictly business.
That was probably smart.
It probably was.
There are governmental types that might not be happy about Bitcoin.
Yeah, but, I mean, there's not much they can do about it, right? The genie's out of the bottle.
Right. Even if they got him, it's too late.
I mean, I guess they could... Depending on where he is in the world and what the legal jurisdiction is, you know, who knows? Maybe there's a law in whatever country he's in that he could be tried for treason or something crazy.
Right.
I don't know. So it probably was
smart. Wise to be anonymous, probably. Yeah. Just why mess with it? Unless you wanted the glory would be the only reason, because otherwise why take a chance?
And he was definitely not interested in glory. Yeah. He didn't do PR. He never did any interviews. Yeah.
But he owes you a little bit, because I think Bitcoin Faucet, that really did kind of get people's awareness going on that.
Yeah, I didn't realize it, but the very first Bitcoin exchange had started up just a few weeks before I created the Bitcoin Faucet.
Wow.
So I think that
combination
takes
the two together,
of things, I mean, once you could actually, you know, put a price on Bitcoin, that started getting people interested. And that was this around the same time of the famous $1 million pizza.
Do you know the guy who bought the pizza?
I have not met the guy who bought the pizza. I don't know
how
if
much
he
it was, like
it
100 bitcoins or something. What was it?
He bought two pizzas for 10,000 bitcoins.
10,000!
That's why they're million dollar pizzas. They are.
Holy guacamole.
But you know, if he hadn't have done that,
right. That's why I'm holding on to my 3.52 bitcoins. I'm not letting go till they're worth something. More than three, whatever, is $300.
Well, you could sell half of them every time the price doubles, and then you never run out.
Oh, you see? He knows his math. What got you into this? Why did you join the forums and start to... Was it monetary policy that intrigued you? Because that's in itself an interesting issue.
Yeah. Well, I think it was more just the cool geek factor.
It was the math.
Yeah. It was the math and the fact that it could be done.
Right.
And they're just interesting problems.
But you
to
do
solve.
Start getting interested in, you know, these issues that economists debate endlessly.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think it'll be really interesting to see.
It's a test tube.
Exactly.
We'll
economics,
find out.
Study it. It's a real, you know,
you
know? Every transaction is public. You can, you know, start to figure out who's doing what and, you know, what affects kind of macroeconomics in a really interesting way. So
there have been kind of notorious DDoS attacks against some of the exchanges.
Yeah, yeah.
Does that impact it? Is that important or is that just messing around?
It's just messing around, really.
Unless you brought them all down and you brought them down for an extended period of time.
You know, when we launched the Bitcoin Foundation, it was a little controversial to, you know, bring a little bit of centralization to this decentralized project.
Right.
Somebody decided to DDoS our website.
Right.
So now we're behind Cloudflare.
Okay.
And they can't attack us anymore.
Right.
And it just, you know, it costs us a
Don't say
few
that
hundred,
out loud.
It costs us a few hundred dollars a month.
Don't say that out loud. That's just asking for trouble. No need to taunt them. How about the tax ramifications of Bitcoin? Do I have to declare my 3.52 Bitcoins to the IRS?
If you don't want to go to jail.
Yikes.
Well, I mean, your
what value do I use?
Your 3.25 Bitcoins, I don't think you have to declare
no,
until
such a low
you
amount,
actually.
$600 or something.
Well, until you actually do something with them.
It's not real money yet.
It's.
This is. By the way, I know this because I used to go to Canada to make money. It's exactly the same as making money in a international currency.
It should be, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It should be treated exactly the same way. And I think the IRS has indicated that's probably how they're going to treat it.
So, I mean, theoretically, I suppose if you're a business, you should declare that as income.
Right.
And then if you sell them at a profit, you declare that as capital gains.
Right.
So, you know, it is exactly the same as, you know, getting Canadian dollars.
Right, right, right. Wow. I I'm intrigued by the math, but I'm more intrigued by the politics, by the financial and economic issues that it raises and what it means about, and this is what really is, I think, scary to people, what it means about the value of fiat currencies, of American greenbacks. And where does that value come from?
Well, you know, I in my pocket, I keep a visual aid of why a lot of people think Bitcoin is cool. This is a $100 trillion note.
From the Bank of Zimbabwe.
From the Bank of Zimbabwe from 2009.
Yeah.
You know, this happened just a few years ago.
Yeah, hyperinflation.
That there, and you know, if you lived in Zimbabwe, you know, before that happened, it is devastating. And you probably trusted that would not happen.
Right.
And yet it happened.
Yeah.
Now,
you had your savings in Zimbabwe dollars in the bank, and it's suddenly worth nothing.
Exactly.
Because of hyperinflation.
Central bankers and the leader of Zimbabwe decided, we want your money, and we're just going to
happen in Weimar, Germany. I mean, it's happened before. It's happened in many countries. Now, of course, I think one of the reasons the U.S. dollar is considered so valuable is because it's backed by the federal U.S. government, the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, and people have a little more faith in that than they do in perhaps the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe. Nevertheless,
I don't think
that's a great visual aid.
Don't think the U.S. dollar is going to go the way of Zimbabwe.
It could though. Nothing.
Theoretically, it could. You know, yeah. I mean, they could decide to inflate away.
Right. Let's hope they don't.
But yeah, I don't think they will.
No.
But you know, that does bring up. You know, we're seeing Bitcoin take off in parts of Germany, I think partly because the Germans...
They remember.
I mean, you know, here in the U.S., we've never had hyperinflation.
We never had to go to the grocery store with a wheelbarrow
full
of cash.
Exactly. We don't have that experience, and so we really trust our currency.
Right.
And our currency is the world's reserve currency.
Right.
So I wouldn't be surprised at all if Bitcoin really takes off in other parts of the world where they have, you know, not as much faith.
I think that's why Cyprus is interested,
yep.
You know? Wow. I think this is such an interesting topic. And Gavin, I'm glad somebody with it's sensible is running the Bitcoin Foundation. I think it's a very intriguing thing. What does the future hold? I mean, certainly the attention is there. People now know about Bitcoin. I think there's a lot of interest in Bitcoin. What do you think will take it to the next level? What do we need to have happen?
Well, I still tell people expect chaos and drama and expect
volatility
bubbles,
and bubbles.
Expect, yeah, I mean, this is a startup currency. And right. if you've been around startups, you know that there's always going to be drama and chaos
yep.
and volatility.
Yep.
But long term, I'm still pretty positive about Bitcoin because, you know, the fundamentals are secure and the idea behind it is really solid. And there's no theoretical reason why it can't, you know, grow to be a currency as important as dollars or yens or euros.
Do you actively encourage merchants to accept Bitcoin? I mean, do you go around door to door saying, hi, I'm Gavin Andreessen?
I haven't done that yet, although I think I will start doing that soon because the merchant
Cup and
Solutions,
Cake doing okay?
Yeah, they're doing great.
Have they told you how many people come in? Are you the only guy spending Bitcoin there, or is it more common?
The person who sold me the cupcakes said that I was the second one today.
Wow.
Normally they get three or four people a week.
That's really amazing.
In buying cupcakes for Bitcoin. So, yeah, and that's not a lot yet, but
it's surprisingly a lot.
It is.
To be honest, I'm surprised there's a cupcake company in San Francisco selling cupcakes for Bitcoins. Gavin, it's been so good to talk to you. I really appreciate it. And I think I'm getting an idea of what Bitcoin is and what it represents. And I just think it's a fascinating project. And it's something you just want to watch and see what happens next. We live in interesting times.
It is. My life has been incredibly interesting since I got involved in
Bitcoin. You get paid
Bitcoin
in Bitcoin?
I do get paid in Bitcoin.
Not money? Not cash?
Well, no, Bitcoin is money.
Not greenbacks?
No, I get first of every month, I get Bitcoin sent to one of my Bitcoin
addresses. Wow!
Yeah.
And how's your wife feel about that?
She thinks it's great. I mean, she doesn't call it my pretend money project anymore.
She doesn't. That's
no,
good.
No, I mean, once Bitcoin went above like $10
yes,
a piece,
it starts to look better and better.
She figured out it's, you know, you can actually buy things with Bitcoin.
Wow. Wow. It's brave, though. That's putting your money where your mouth is, so to speak. Your Bitcoin where your mouth is.
It is. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I've done startups in the past, so
it's no worse than that.
Working for a startup, you're never sure if your next paycheck
right.
is going to happen
exactly.
anyway. So.
Exactly. Bitcoinfoundation.org. If people want to know more, if you want to do Bitcoin mining, is there stuff there that they can find out about? Or
Bitcoin.org.
That's the
might
place
be a
to
better
go
place
that.
To go. They have lots of links.
And
to
if you go there, you can get links to the software. You can have Bitcoin Wallet for Android, iOS, Macintosh, Windows, Linux, all the operating systems.
Yep.
And certainly that's the place to start. And if you're a merchant, then maybe BitPay or somewhere like that.
Yep.
Yeah. Thank you, Gavin.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it.
Great to be here.
Wow. Every once in a while we do interviews where I feel like I'm looking at the future now. And this is one of them. Gavin Andreessen, BitcoinFoundation.org. We do Triangulation every Wednesday afternoon right after This Week in Google. It's supposed to be around 3 or 4 p.m. Pacific, 6 or 7 p.m. Eastern time, 2200 to 2300 UTC. If you tune in around about that time, you'll probably get a pretty good idea of when the show's going to be on. Lots of very interesting people. Who's coming up? 2 weeks is Doug Rushkoff. Next week, Karsten? Eric Drexler, the king of nanotech. He's the guy who came up with the concept of gray goo. We'll talk about nanotech next week. That's going to be talk about the future. That's going to be very interesting. Thanks to Karsten Bonney, our producer, who gets us great guests every week. Thanks to you. When you watch live and ask questions in the chat room, it's so useful. And, of course, if you've missed any episodes, we have 103 great episodes now in the can, all available on demand in audio and video at twit.tv/TRI. Better yet, subscribe. That way you'll get every episode fresh out of the oven at absolutely no cost to you. However, if you would like to donate some Bitcoin, we have a little barcode on our front page at twit.tv. Just scan that with your phone. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on Triangulation.